This is a Pinball News production.
All right, so what exactly is a patent attorney before we start? I did go to law school. I graduated law school. And then I took a separate exam called the patent bar. So not only am I a lawyer, but I also can practice before the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Oh, thank you. So I can practice. So today's 1 hour is going to be an overview of the current patents that are pending in the pinball market. What do we expect to see in the future? If you want to know what the future is going to hold, guess where you go? You go to the patent office, because that'll tell you exactly what the manufacturers want to do. I'm also going to go through where we've been. From the 1800s to today, how has pinball evolved? Now, it becomes important in the patent world how it evolves, because that'll tell you what you can patent in the future. And I'll explain a little bit more as we go along. So the first thing I want to do is I want to talk, I know some people here are from Canada, some are from England, so I'm not sure where everybody knows, but I want to kind of start off with the basics. Trademarks and patents, what is the difference? So I have my nice little example here, which is the iPad. Now, a patent simply is the machine, the device itself, the design of the device, how it looks, how you use it, how it's manufactured. But the apple on the screen, that is the trademark. How one recognizes a product is called the trademark. Now, obviously, you guys are bombarded every day with trademarks. Coca-Cola, Apple, and especially in pinball, that's going to be a big issue. And we're going to, towards the end of the hour, I'm going to go through the current trademark applications. So the pinball machines you see today have probably already been applied for. But there are actually trademarks pending for names that they're going to use in the future. And I actually found a couple that you might find interesting. All right, so again, a patent, under the laws in the United States, it's going to be to make, use, or sell a device. If you have a pinball machine, how you make it can be patented. How you use it, theoretically, could be patented. And how you sell it, you get the exclusive rights of selling it. Now, you have a secondary market, which is fine to use also. But the primary sale can be excluded based on a patent. Now, there are two types of patents. I'm going to start off with how the patent system works. When you have an invention, let's say you have a pinball machine, you can do two different ways of patenting it to protect yourself from others using it. You have what's called a utility application. A utility application is what you think it is. The utility, how it functions, which bells go off, the LED use versus a light bulb use, then the xenon gas, argon gas, whatever it may be. That can be patented. Now, what's more interesting is how a pinball is laid out, how the actual surface is laid out. That can be patented also as a design patent. Now, so you say, okay, so why don't they just patent every design out there? The problem is you can design around a design patent. So it's really not that effective, which is why most people don't patent their actual design of the table. Trademarks. You get the exclusive use of that name, mark, and symbol. Okay, but here's the catch to it. When you apply for your trademark, you actually apply for the specific use of your trademark. So, for example, the Addams Family. The Addams Family creator really didn't think about pinball machines when they made the show. They were thinking of something completely different. But as time went on, MGM, all the studios realized, wait a minute, we need to cover ourselves on every use of our name. And pinball is a great example of where a simple name transcends to a different use. So let's start off and go through the history of patents.
Now, the history of pinball, and I apologize if you've heard this before, but it's kind of interesting. The game pinball, who knows what country it originates from? Anybody here? Give me an answer.
France.
France is correct. 1800s. The pinball machine, well, what was formerly known as the pinball machine, was known as a baguette, if that's pronounced right. Right. I don't speak French, so I don't know. What essentially it was, there was a flat table. You had a cue, like in pool, and you hit a ball, and wherever it landed, you got those points. That was it. That was the entire game. But that started off about 200 years ago. Then, things started changing very quickly in 1871. In 1871, Mr. Redgrave filed for a patent application with the United States Patent and Trademark Office. In that application, what he claims is he says to the patent office, hey, I got a great idea. I've improved this game. I'm going to improve this game, baguettes. By the way, I did a search in the patent office. This is the last time that in 1871 that any patent refers to the word baguettes. Ever since 1871, they use different names. Pinball doesn't start until about the 1930s, 1940s. But it was called a ball rolling game. It was used some other term. They didn't use the word pinball. They used something else. But his first invention, his first idea, was to make it a slanted surface. Now you can tell in the bottom right corner, and I hope people can see, these are actually images from his patent itself. This is from 1871. The bottom right corner you can see, he came up with the idea of using gravity as a competitor against the human skill. This is the first time this has ever been done. So Mr. Redgrave decides, hey, I have an idea. Let's make this a slanted surface. Then he comes up with another idea. Instead of using a pool cue, let's try a tension spring to the piston, that's actually a piston, that propels a ball, which is commonly known as... Thank you. But this came out in 1871, so almost 140 years ago, really is the start of the pinball machine. And then we move along. So for about 30, 40 years, in 1931, here's kind of the problem that happens. The game is more like a parlor game. And what they do is they put this game and they put it on a table just like this. Let's really didn't exist on a pinball machine. It really was just a simple parlor game you put on your table. So what happened was people would kind of shift around, they moved around a little bit, and they kind of tried to, cheat a little bit. So the first thing that had to be corrected in 1831 was the tilt. They had to figure out what way to prevent people from moving it left to right. So they do is a simple technique, a T. For those who are doing the mechanics repair work, you guys can comment about it. It was a very simple and creative idea. If the table would be rocking in any which way, to a certain degree, the game would stop. Simple. But that was done in 1931. From this point on, the game is going to move a lot quicker. The inventions and the development of the game is going to start moving. All right, 1938. And know the question.
I have a question on the tilt pad.
I'm sorry?
On the tilt pad?
Sure.
Does that cover just that design of tilt, or any?
Okay, good question. So the answer is just that one specific design. Now, you cannot say any tilt. It doesn't work that way. It is the mechanism that is described in the patent. It is that invention itself, not the concept of tilt. It is actually how tilt works. Now, here's the concept of the patent office, which I'm going to eventually get into. Let's say that tilt mechanism was used somewhere else. It was used in, it was used in a pool table, whatever it is, right?
for whatever reason, a pool table has it. What the patent office can do, they can say, wait a minute, once skilled in the art would know what a pool table does, and they would know what a pinball machine is, and they would combine the two together. So I'm not giving you a patent because of that. So if the invention is somewhere else in the world and you try to combine it, you're probably not going to get a patent. Unless you could show that one skilled in the art would never think about it. Which is why conventions like this become more important. Because really no one really thought about it or never discussed it in a convention, then one skilled in the art would never think about it. Is that okay?
So, in 1938,
Bailey makes a baseball game.
A very simple, slanted surface, you hit a ball, the ball rolls, and either it's a single, a double, a triple, or a home run.
And this was the first time point operation comes about.
But ironically, in 1938, just kind of giving you a context of what's going on, in 1938, patent applications are really starting to move on coin operations. I saw a coin operation for a nail drying, coin operation for vending machines. This is really the time of the vending machine, the operation of a coin moving an object. This is kind of 1930s, right before World War II starts, kind of putting it in historical context. But baseball is very popular. And of course, I had to leave Wrigley Field to go Cubs go. Sorry for those who are not a Cubs fan, but if you're a Mets fan, I apologize. The Cubs will win. So this is the first coin operation is in 1938. So again, from 1870s to 1931 to 1938. We've already gotten to the slanted table. We've gotten to a spring operation. And we've gotten to the coin operation. We're almost there. We're really almost at the primary element to a pinball machine.
Question.
Sorry.
Yeah, there were a few machines. You know, when you say first coin operation, there were a few machines made in the 1933, 1934 era. World Series, Jigsaw. So I would say coin operation, depending on how you define it, maybe start a little bit earlier than 1938.
Correct. Coin operation was well before that anyways, on other items. The issue was, this is kind of the evolution of pinball, and he actually ended up describing a quote-unquote pinball machine and got a patent out of it.
That's the first coin operation patent?
Correct.
Okay.
And how he got it, there's ways you could get around the patent office, but essentially this was the first one to kind of protect the 20... By the way, for a patent, by the way, you get 20 years protection. So from 1938 to 1958... he gets the exclusive right to use, make, sell the coin operation for this surface, slanted surface, et cetera, et cetera. That's where it becomes important. Yeah, you could do it for other items, but he gets the 20 years on this one specific issue. All right. 1949. Our boys come back from Europe, and pinball is starting to become more popular because, again, it's kind of a table game. And now they're starting to have legs on it. But at the soda shop, people are coming back to America. This is becoming more of a popular game. So in 1948, the simple receptor, a simple mechanism where a ball activates a machine gives you a point. Very simple concept. But it actually took them almost 70 years to come up with this idea. But the mechanism, which is a very simple mechanism still used today, was done in 1948, 65 years ago. But what's missing from this mechanism by the way, patented this one, I apologize. The simple electric switch bumper. Very simple mechanism. Gottlieb came up with this idea. Alright, as the ball moves across, the device gets signaled by a ball, it gets impacted, and it gives a device, and it gives a signal. But then, it took them almost 10 years, was it 10 years? Eight years later, a simple idea came up. Let's combine the switch to a light to a bumper.
8 years it took them to figure that one out. Just adding a simple device. Now, going back to what you can't patent. Yes, lights are available, and yes, a bumper is available. But combining the two wasn't really known in the art back then. But in 1957, they put the two together. And even till today, this is one of the most essential elements to a pinball machine. And it's the same technique, same design, same mechanisms that are used today, were used almost 60 years ago.
I'm moving along too quickly. All right. Now, actually, I was walking last night at midnight. I was very surprised. So many people awake at midnight.
Ah.
I'm kidding. So at midnight, I was walking around the game hall, and I saw about two or three games. This dual two-player pinball game. For those who were playing it last night, congratulations. But there were a couple of them in the other room. That actually was invented almost 40 years ago. That simple game of a two-player system. By, again, Alvin Gottlieb. I have no clue if it's related to the Gottlieb industry. Yeah. They are related. Yeah. You guys would know more than I would.
Son.
Their son. I was just testing him. Good job. Thank you. So Gottlieb's son comes up with an idea of a two-player game, and he files the application. He gets the application on July 11th, 1972. Now, just to remind you guys, the patent itself is only good for 20 years. So this patent is well expired. So if one wanted to make a pinball machine with a dual player, then manufacture and sell it, they could do it. Because the patent is already expired. What happens a lot of times is, and that's maybe in the pinball world and elsewhere, what they'll do is they'll add on to it. They'll add another element to it to try to extend the patent. It doesn't exactly work well that way, and the patent office catches on quickly. You can't do that. But a lot of people try that because you want to exclude others from making and selling this product. So you try to add on to it. It really doesn't work out well, but it's been tried before many times. But again, in July 11, 1972, is really now you can see the complexity of the game table. As for the all the elements are there. The flippers there, the bumpers are there. The designs are all there. So by the 1950s, the golden age is over, you really have almost all the elements for a pinball machine done by 1972. All right, 1974. The electric bumper comes about. I assume it's still used today. I'm kidding. 1974, 2 years later, you have an electric bumper. So what happens is a very simple response. The ball hits a bumper on the sides, and there's a response, a simple electric response to the bumper. And this is almost 100 years after the initial invention of the pinball. 1974 comes around. Now they're adding an entirely new dimension to the game. They're adding on the sides, the bumpers. I had a bad picture there, but they're adding in this electric device that will be responsive to ball pressure. Now, as you play today, a lot of your mechanisms relate to the ball's pressure. When a ball hits something, when it moves somewhere, it is a response to the ball. And what I think I heard about an hour or a half hour ago is, what do we do with our CPUs, our computers? Because I'll tell you right now what your computers are doing. They're analyzing how you play. And you're going to find out in a few minutes what the current patents are that are pending for the patent office. And a lot of it is based on this concept, tracking how you play and making the game more difficult for you. And I'll explain that what it is in a minute. Someone filed a patent on that. I'll get to that in a minute. So 1974 is response to the ball. All right. I'm going to move a little bit ahead and skip to the 1990s. And I don't know if this is actually used today. I apologize. There was an idea back, they were kind of experimenting in the 1990s on how to play, what to do, how to make it better. The internet really hadn't gotten, has not been exploded yet. So they're trying to figure out ways to make this game more creative. One of the ideas
in 1998 was to make a magnetic ball. Smart idea. So what'll happen is, and this was kind of concept in the patent. You hit the ball, it goes up the board, and let's say it had a hole, it got caught in. Alright, instead of actually the ball falling in the hole and you lift it up, you actually had a magnet in the hole that would hold on to the ball. That would control the ball. So they actually had magnets placed throughout the board. And the idea was somehow to figure out a way to change the table using simple mechanisms, mechanics that's already known. So 1998, there was actually an application, and I want to kind of bring up this issue for those who are from Europe, and I think there's some people here from England. The application itself was filed in Europe, not in the United States. All right, now I want to explain why that's significant. In the United States, we actually, back in the 1990s and 2000s, we actually had a different patent system entirely than Europe. In the United States, up until about 4 years ago, 3 years ago, our system was completely opposite of Europe. Europe was first to file. Whoever filed first had priority. In the United States, up until about 2010-ish, it was first to invent. Whoever invented it first. Now the catch is, you have to prove when you invented it. It wasn't that easy. And then, if you went to a convention like this and you displayed it, you were actually going to be barred from filing a patent application if you didn't file your application for a certain period of time. So it got a little bit, so the United States was very complicated. Europe was much more simple. First to file. You make the invention, you file it. If you disclose it to the public, you lose. So it kind of makes sense to file it in Europe sometimes. So they filed it in Europe. Several reasons why. Number one, also it's cheaper in Europe. It's a little bit easier to get through the European system than it is to get to the United States system. And it depends on where the inventor lived. If the inventor actually is from Europe, there's a good chance they're going to file it in Europe. As a patent attorney, I almost always tell people to file it in the United States. Why? Because we are generally the wealthiest nation on Earth, and we respect patent laws more than European countries do. When you have a patent here, we enforce it. What I tell clients is, stuff being recorded, don't file it in China. It's not worth it. Because they're not going to respect the patent laws there. They don't care about them there. Just like India is the same issue. India, great country, a lot of people, but they don't have much respect for patent laws. But this individual decided not to file in the United States for whatever reason. They filed it in Europe for the magnetic ball. I don't know if it caught on there, but they had it there.
Okay. Now the exciting part.
What the future is going to hold. So here's what you could do. If you really wanted to find out, and you're a mechanic or you're really an enthusiast of pinball, there's actually an easy way to find out what the future is going to hold. Well, that's hard, actually. Those who got a good memory, www.google.com /patents, P-A-T-E-N-T-S. Google, not only is it a very good search engine for certain things, they actually have a database of all patent applications pending. It's actually a pretty good database, to be honest. But let me kind of go through, and I'm going to take a step back for a minute on how the system actually works. Let's say, Martin comes up to me and says, I have an idea of a great invention. Today's January 1st. And I say, Martin, I'd love to help you. I'm going to file your patent application. So Martin says, my invention is to add widgets to a table. Okay. So we file our application January 1st, 2015. Okay. The way the patent office works is pretty simple. You have two choices the day you file. You could file what's called a provisional application, or you could file what's called a non-provisional application. A provisional application, the way I describe it to my clients, is like going to a deli counter. You get that little ticket in your hand. You don't order anything. You can walk away at any time. Nothing really happens. But you're in line. For a provisional application for Martin, he could wait 1 year in line. He gets his priority date. Again, I apologize. In America now, we are first to file. We switched about 4 years ago. So Martin keeps his priority date. But the catch is, no one else can see his patent application other than the patent office, Martin, and myself. We're the only three that can see it. So you, the general public, cannot see what Martin is doing. All right, so you wait the 1 year. Then you convert it from a provisional to a non-provisional. Once you file that non-provisional, Martin then gets another 18 months before it's actually published to the entire world. So Martin's idea stays confidential for at least 2.5 years. That's the way our patent system works. So Martin, if he wants to, can go to any manufacturer, anyone he wants, and to try to sell his idea, if he chooses to. Or, the other option is, if you're a pinball manufacturer, and you want to work out the tweaks, and you kind of want to figure out how it works, get it done right, you got basically 2 years to figure it out. You file your application, and you basically have 2 years to figure it out. So when I say that, really the forefront of patents is on Google because they're published, I'm not exactly telling you the whole truth. Because there's that 2 year time frame that Martin or whoever it is could actually have his application confidential. It's not published. But the reality is, once you file it, you're going to want to get it out in the market to try to corner the market, to capture the market. Let's be honest. Pinball manufacturers are in to make money. They're in to make money. They want to get their product out first, corner the market. So they have basically 2 years head start before anybody else even can get there. So let's talk about most recent applications. The most recently published application, I'm going to talk about 2014-2015. There's an application currently pending that gives, instead of, what they basically do is they put a tilt system within the CPU, and they're detecting any movement whatsoever, a three-dimensional movement, any movement whatsoever. If they catch it and it goes beyond a certain threshold, the game is partially stopped, completely stopped, or any variation thereof. This application is by an accelerometer. You know what an accelerometer is? It measures how things accelerate, how things move. Does it move quickly? Does it move slowly? So if the table is moving at a certain rate, they will then stop it. Okay? That is one of the current patent applications that are pending. So what you might see in the future... Well, I can look it up if you want me in about 10 seconds.
But it's
in the public domain. If I really wanted to look it, I could look it up. I just forgot to put it in there. I can tell you who the inventor is, who he assigned it to. If you want me to look it up, I'll give you about 10 seconds. If anybody has the internet, they can look it up quickly by typing in www.google.com/patents. And if you put in the US 201-402-65113, it'll pop up very quickly. The question was, who is the inventor? Can I look it up? And the answer is, if you really want to look it up right now, if you go to google.com/patents, you can look it up pretty quickly.
Stern.
What?
Stern Pinball.
Stern Pinball is out.
Yeah, but I think UltraPin had that feature several years ago, so they may not get that one.
They're probably not. Yeah, and then again, the three-dimensional axis has probably been around for quite some time. What a lot of times people will do, as a patent attorney, I've done this before, not suggesting it's wrong. Sometimes you know there's a good chance your patent's not going to succeed. But there's something there that is novel. You file it anyways, and you got 2 years anyways to say you have a patent pending. If you lose, you lose. For the whatever it costs you to file the patent, it's worth the investment for a business perspective. So, this is one of the current applications. All right. This one's a little bit different, and I'm kind of surprised this is actually being applied. For the construction for the amusement game device, and this is published April 3rd, 2014, they're using knockdown fasteners. For those who don't know what a knockdown fastener is, If you've ever built a crib or you built a furniture in your house, when you go to Home Depot, when you go to like Walmart and you buy a cabinet, what they basically are is it's a circular, it's kind of a nut and bolt theory, I guess, but it's a little bit different. You put a male joint into a female joint, and what will happen is you turn the female joint and it locks it. This actually is in the public domain for many years. I think this is also Stearns doing this one too, if I'm not mistaken. In this case, what they're trying to do is make a quicker, faster, more efficient way of making the cabinets for the actual pinball machine itself. Reality is, and I don't know how effective this patent application is going to be, but the reality is a fastener is already in the public domain. I think everybody in this room knows what a fastener is. To get this patent application, it would be relatively difficult. But the logic is, you file the application, you kind of try to exclude anyone else from thinking about doing it. So you try to corner the market for 2 years, and then if it doesn't work out, well, you got 2 years to jump ahead of everybody else anyways.
Okay. Let's see. LEDs. All right. I know you guys were talking about it a few minutes ago. The application itself was published in 2014. So which meant they actually, LEDs were probably started to be used around 2011-ish, 12-ish, sound about right?
The 12-ish, sound about right? The LEDs were starting to be used. Give or take, whatever it was. So in 2014, it was published to use multicolor, tricolor LEDs to provide illuminating game surface. And I know we talked, I was listening to it about a few minutes ago, but this was, if it actually succeeds, let's assume this patent gets granted, you're going to exclude anyone else for the next 20 years on making, selling, or basically using the use of a pinball machine with LEDs. This actually could be an important patent if it gets granted by excluding other individuals manufacturing or selling.
It's Stern.
It's what? It's Stern also. What?
Okay. This one I found pretty interesting. And this one you guys will find interesting if you've not seen it yet. I walked around the floor yesterday. I didn't see it. This is by... Metamorphic Inc. is the assignee. It's the business. Okay. What they're doing, they want to change the table as you play. This is kind of an interesting idea. So let's assume you have a game that you play right now. Now, they want to change not only the surface, the lights, they actually want to change how you play. So theoretically, you don't have a board surface. You have a changing surface to the game. And I think what the logic they're doing is this. And I could be wrong, but I read through the patent, I think this is what their logic is. You have a computer chip that analyzes how you play, your tendencies, where you like to hit the ball, and it'll kind of collect data now, which bumpers you tend to hit, where the ball generally goes to. Knowing that information, they could design the board and change the board to make it more difficult.
I think, based on if that phrase automatic level detection is in there, another thing it could be is just compensation. If the thing is unlevel, it says, well, often the switches on the right are being hit, and so it's going to do something to compensate because something is making it go to the right too often. It's not level. So it could be that also.
It could also be that. I mean, again, when you file a patent application, you don't say specifically what it's used for.
Right.
The general use is irrelevant. It's the device itself that makes a difference. But it's kind of the future to what you're going to see. You're going to actually see the image is changing as you go along. We're not talking. Give me one second. We're not talking about a screen that shows a different picture. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about images actually on the table that will change as it goes along. Question.
Yeah, I believe that's.
Oh, no, I didn't see that one.
Yes. Yeah. They use like an LED.
Oh, that's that
like,
it's
like visual football to some extent, but it's combining the physical ball.
Combining everything. So if you actually want to, and Here's the thing. This might be the first year they actually had this booth out there, but reality was this has been out for 2 years. If you really wanted to see what they were going to do today, this was in the public domain 2 years ago. Now, it's funny. I lecture sometimes at a high school, and these kids, they love their iPad. They love their iPhones. And I tell people this, and they don't believe me. If you really want to know what the next iPhone device is going to be, do the same thing. Go to Google's patents.com or what I described for you. And actually, Apple does the same thing. Their information actually is out there if you really wanted to look for it. But most people don't really care to spend the time going through all the patent applications and figuring out what's out there. But if you really are an enthusiast about your iPhone or some sort of technology, remember, these companies are all filing patent applications, and they all get published eventually. So if you really want to see what's going to be in the future, this is the way to do it. Okay. Now, 2000 to 2007, and I'm almost done with the kind of the history of pinball. 2000 to 2007, a lot of the applications that you see were related to internet-based, making multiplayer games, interacting, finding ways to take the one game and make it internet-based. So instead of showing you guys all the different applications, I just want to kind of show you what the evolution was. So from 2000 to 2007, a lot of the technology that was being developed was figuring out a way to get multiplayer games throughout the country, which I assume you guys which you have now, tournaments, pinball tournaments, virtual pinball tournaments. But what they did was, as you kind of get a sense of the business side of it, because you had electric gaming becoming more and more popular, gambling, the transcending of that technology was used to pinball switched to gaming technology. Because you had so much intermingling between the two, each of them were using each other's technology. All right. Trademark law. Again, this is through the patent office. The patent office does both patents and trademarks. Now, what you could do theoretically, if you wanted to figure out what the next big pinball machine is going to be, or what a person wants to do, there is a distinction between patents and trademarks. In trademarks, when you file for a trademark, it actually becomes in the public domain right away. So, if you want to figure out what Stern is going to do, what their next product is going to be, you could actually look to find out, you could find Stern as an assignee of the corporation, and you could look to see what names have been assigned to Stern. Do they have their own type of device? Now, there again, I mentioned to you a while ago, they're really, when you talk about pinball, they're talking about two different issues. The one side of it is you have the companies, MGM, NBC, whatever the companies are, they have their own television shows. And they're, or movies, or bands, Kiss, whatever it is. They are going to file a trademark for their own name. But they're also going to file it for everything else under the sun. For pinball machines, for boots, for glasses. My little girl even has a Hannah Montana comb. They do everything, for those who know what Hannah Montana is. They market it and trademark it for every device. But let's say you have a novel name. You're going to call yourself the Pinball Circus. Right? By Circus Maximus Group, this is the most recent one I found for a pinball machine. So it's not related to a television show or a group, but it's one of you want to be something that you are going to create as an entity on your own. You could do that also. So when you talk about trademarks for pinball machines, I look at it two different ways. Did Stern make up the name, or are they using someone else's name? If they're using someone else's name, generally that right stays with the company. KISS keeps their name, they license it to Stern. On the other hand, Stern's main goal is going to be to create their own name, to create their own brand image. So, the Pinball Circus. Ironically, if you actually looked up the word pinball as a trademark name, someone had the sense of trademarking the name pinball. And it is trademarked legally. You cannot use the name pinball if you are using it towards alcoholic beverages. Someone actually has a trademark for the name pinball related to alcoholic beverages. They have the exclusive right to name a beer can, whiskey, whatever it is, with the word pinball. Now, it's exclusive, it's a different use than what is commonly known as pinball. It's not a slanted table. This is alcohol. So if you wanted to actually call your cell phone a pinball, let's do something else. You wanted to call a chair, you wanted to make it look like a pinball, you theoretically could do that. It's a different use than the pinball machine. So just beware, if you are brewing your own moonshine in your backyard, don't call it pinball. Someone already has the trademark on it. Now, here's an interesting one. I typed in the word pinball and kind of did a search. For those who have kids, here's an interesting one. DreamWorks Animation. You guys ever heard of that one? They did, what did they do? Pixel or something like that, right? Pixar, thank you. DreamWorks Animation filed a trademark application for something called Flaming Aces McFeely. Now, you guys heard it first here. I promise you. They're going to come out with a movie soon. They're going to start marketing this with the words Flaming Ace McFeely. Now, in trademark law, you could actually file your trademark with the intent to use it in the future. And that's what DreamWorks is doing. They are probably good. My guess is they are making a movie, or they're going to make a movie, called Flaming Aces McFeely. And it's already trademarked for the use on a pinball machine. So you guys could actually get ahead of the curve and know what movie companies are doing in the future, because they have to file a trademark before anybody else does. Let's assume there's a movie coming out. I can almost guarantee you that movie's trademark's already been covered. It's going to be covered for every marketing and novelty item you can imagine. Question?
So with this trademark law, Stern only does licensed products, so they would not have a trademark, right?
They do have a trademark. They actually have a trademark on their own name.
Right, on their own name, but not on the name of the machine. Because every machine they do is licensed.
If they decide to do that, yes, then of course.
Game
they.
Runs, Kiss, Metallica, AC/DC, everything's a licensed product.
Yes. But if they wanted to create their own name to get more, you get more wealth, more, you get more benefit from not licensing, but having your own name. As a patent attorney, I tell people, it's nice you have a license, but you got to pay royalty on that. It's great. But if you could create your own image, it's even better. But again, if all they're going to do is license out, they're doing a fine job. But the idea is, as a patent attorney, my advice to clients is always, is there any way you can create your own branding, your own image? Right? But again, let's assume, for argument's sake, KISS only wants to do band. They only want to do music. So theoretically, if Stern wanted to, make a, without the image but just the name, they could, without any music on the pinball machine itself. But let me give you a good example. Give me 1 second. There's a famous case. There's a famous case in the 1980s. Four boys came up with a record label. And the record label, most of you guys might know about it, it had a little green apple in the center of it. Right? Anybody know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Beatles, of course. So what they decided to do is they got the trademark on the green apple, and they call themselves Apple. Right? Along comes some company out in California that decides to make a computer. Now, in the 1980s, that computer didn't play music. It wasn't known for music. It was only known to be a computer. So the two parties had an agreement. Apple says, the Beatles, fine, you want to use the term Macintosh Apple? Go ahead. Don't play music. Apple says, fine. Sure, why not? All of a sudden, in the year 2000-ish, 19, whatever it was, my little kid comes home and says, Mommy, Daddy, I got to have an
what are those things called? An iPad?
iPod.
iPod was the first one. The iPod. That caused a whole lot of problems. Apple was willing to take the hit on the trademark in violation to get their product in the music industry. And I think Apple's done a pretty good job making money on their iPad and the iPod and everything else. In the end, the two parties settled out of court. But it shows, to your issue, it shows the importance of the trademark and licensing it properly. And my advice to Stern is to figure out a way to create your own name if possible. If it's great, you can do it. If not, license it. It'll cost you a little bit, but you might make more money selling the KISS product. Question?
So what are we able to, information are we able to derive from, like, the DreamWorks trademark application? I mean, does this mean that DreamWorks is going to come up with a pinball toy, or does this mean that it's a character in a pinball related movie? Do we have any idea?
Okay, yes. So when you apply for your trademark, you actually have to say what you're going to use it for. So there's actually classifications that you are going to say. So if I actually looked it up on a computer in front of me, I can show you. It'll say, for the use of pinball machine, comma, animation, comma, movie, comma, entertainment, whatever it might be. But it's all these classifications. But you kind of get a sense of what it is as you go along. If it just says pinball, it's just a pinball machine. But if it says movie or whatever, you know, if it has this whole slew of uses, then it's probably going to be a movie or a character. But then again, DreamWorks isn't exactly known for making pinball machines. They're kind of known for other things. So you kind of put one and one together, and if you really want to know what the future pinball machines that are going to be coming out, this is an easy way of figuring it out. What I really wanted to show you guys is how the pinball, the objective is to show you, you could put the pieces together one and one. You could go through the different patent office procedures and kind of put together where the future is going to be for patent, for pinball. If you really wanted to put the pieces together, you could kind of figure it out. You could look at trademarks. What are the next pinball machines that are going to be coming out? Who's filing for them? That's the other issue. Who's the inventors? And this is just something that, it's a little bit different, kind of a one-hour presentation. Instead of talking about repair work, I thought it would be a little bit interesting to show you guys another aspect of the business side of the pinball machine. Question?
Do trademarks expire like patents?
No. As long, yes and no. No, they do not expire as long as you renew them. As long as you renew them, and the way the renewal works is this. You file it today after you get your trademark. In 5 years, you have to pay a renewal fee. 5 more years, so 10 years, you have a renewal fee. Then every 10 years, you have to pay another renewal fee. So Coca-Cola theoretically could last forever, which it probably will. On the other hand, one thing I have not talked about, which is copyrights. Copyrights do not last forever. Those only last a certain period of time. Those last, and I always forget to say, always change it. I want to say it's 90 years after the death of the author, but it always changes. Why does it change? Because about 60 years ago, an individual died. He had a couple of nice little designs, and he decided to chirogenically place himself in the middle of Orlando. And unfortunately, he's got this really good product. And he copyrighted all these products, but he wants to keep that copyright protection possible. So Sonny Bono, who is a popular musician, and he also was a congressman at the time, comes up with an idea. Wait a minute. Mr. Disney died. His copyrights are expiring. Huh. I want to extend the life of a copyright. So he applies for, he drafts a bill. He gets passed. That's why I keep on saying it changes, because they're trying to protect the Disney name, they're trying to protect the image of Mickey Mouse, and all these musicians want their copyrights protected for a longer period of time. So it changes, I can never remember the date, but I want to say it's like 90 years or 70 years after an artist dies, because of the problem with Disney. Because Disney died about 6 years ago, and the image of Mickey Mouse will expire eventually.
and it'll be free use for everybody, theoretically. But they seem to do a very good job protecting themselves.
All right, so I want to thank everybody. I'm not sure on time. Am I okay on time?
3 minutes.
All right, 3 minutes left. That's awesome. I told you guys I was good. So 3 minutes left. I hope you guys enjoy this. It's a little bit different than just how to repair a pinball machine or whatever it is. And the idea is to show you guys there is a different side of pinball technology. As much as you guys like to play it, there's a lot of work and effort that goes into it and a lot of time and money that goes into those machines. What I also want you to think about in technology for a pinball machine, you can actually utilize the current technology in other fields and bring it into a pinball machine. And that's my guess is going to happen. If I'm working for Stern, whoever it is going to be, and I'm designing a pinball machine, I'm going to start looking around at current technologies in other fields and figure out how can I apply those technologies to a pinball machine. That's really my guess where the future is. Because the internet is growing leaps and bounds, electronic gaming is growing leaps and bounds, and a lot of money and resources are going into video gaming, different technologies. My guess is, if I'm designing a pinball machine, I'm going to start looking around at other inventions, other technologies, and adding the two together. Now, will I get a patent on it? No, probably not. But if I applied for my patent application, and I again have that 2.5 years time that I could play around, I can start really cornering the market, which I think is what you guys see in the corner over there. You have a manufacturer who applied 2.5 years ago, and you're seeing it today. They're already ahead of the market. That's really what, as a patent attorney, my recommendation and my goal is how do I develop and how do I protect your rights and make you guys money if you're designing the pinball machine? Question?
Okay. Let's say Martin is walking through Walmart. He sees a widget. He says, hey, I can put that in the pinball machine. And he files for January 1st, 2015. But this gentleman over here is walking through a different Walmart, and he sees a widget, and he says, wow, I can put that in the pinball machine. But he does that in, say, February. Has no idea who Martin is. How does that play out? Even if he goes and applies, say on February 1st, how does that play out if it's not disclosed who's doing what?
Okay, so here's what happens.
It's called in trademark world, it's called interference. The patent office will take it on pretty quickly. So in about one or two things will happen. Option number one, in about 2 years after February 1st, and both of them become published, the patent examiner who is assigned to that class of technology will know very quickly something's not right. Because that individual will read both applications. And what that individual will say is, this individual, Joe, whatever his name is, you're going to lose out because Martin has priority. Okay. Joe's problem then is, and it's kind of an evolving system right now because we just changed it 4 years ago. Joe needs to figure out, can I prove I invented before Martin did? But in your scenario, Joe loses every which way. His poker hand, he's a lost guy. Sorry, Joe, you lost. Okay.
Okay, so what about this? What if he doesn't file, but he goes ahead, or even if he does file and he produces, Martin gets sidetracked on something else, and now he's got a game right on the dock ready to go.
Okay, so here's Martin's position. He calls a person like me up.
Says, Larry, I got a problem. Joe is manufacturing what you applied for, and I beat him out. My date on my provisional application beats his date of invention. I write a letter to Joe. It's called a cease and desist letter. Joe, stop manufacturing. Here is our patent application. You are infringing on it, possibly. If we get it granted, we're going after Joe. Joe's going to think twice about distributing his pinball machine. He won't think twice about it. Now, the real problem to your scenario is, what happens if Joe predates Martin? Joe beats out Martin, actually. But instead of Joe filing an application, Joe doesn't care. He just manufactures it, but it's sitting on the dock. And Martin then files afterwards. this is where the problems come in, and this is where litigation comes in. Joe has got to figure out, if Joe really cares, and he put a lot of money into it, he's going to call personally to Larry, file a cease and desist letter against Martin. I predate him. What Joe needs to show is that he showed it to somebody else in the public domain before Martin. He needs to show he predates Martin.
Martin then loses.
That's why when you see those pinball machines out there, those patent applications are already pending. They already filed them, which is why, if you really want to see what technology in the future is, they've already filed them. And that's where all these problems come about. Go ahead.
Quick question about that. What if, let's say, Martin went bankrupt, filed bankruptcy?
Ooh, sorry, Martin.
Okay, now...
13 or 7.
Okay. We'll take this 13. But let's say he's now coming after somebody because he's infringing on their patent, but he doesn't. He's lost all those rights now, hasn't he, because he filed bankruptcy?
Okay, so under bankruptcy law in the United States, for those who are not in the United States, if you file for bankruptcy, all of your assets technically are owned by the trustee who runs your bankruptcy estate. So theoretically, and there are people who specialize in this, by the way, the valuation of a patent in bankruptcy. So theoretically, Martin files for 13. The trustee of the bankruptcy court owns all of Martin's possessions, his house, his car, except for his basic clothing. He basically, the trustee gets all of it, all of the income Martin gets from his job. He's a neurosurgeon, so he makes $700,000 a year. And the trustee gets all of it, and the trustee tells Martin where to give the money to. You got to pay for your mansion in Beverly Hills and your mansion in Miami. Okay. So the question is, what happens to the patents? Theoretically, the patent, assuming it's an application, the application belongs to the trustee estate. If it's a patent, it belongs to the trustee estate. What Martin theoretically could do, he can ask for a stay to get that released. Once he gets that released, he can then go after Joe for the infringement. That's what I would tell Martin.
Is there a time limit? So let's say Martin sits 20 years or 30 years and never follows up on that.
Okay, well, first of all, your patent only lasts for 20 years. So, okay, but there's a doctrine called latches in the legal world. You can't just sit around and not do anything. And I'll give you a good example, which probably applies. You own a piece of property, right? Your next-door neighbor builds a fence, but it's on your property, all right? Might have happened to one of us before. You can't sit around and wait 5 years and say, you know, Bob, you're on my property. You owe me rent for 5 years because you've been there for 5 years. Doesn't work that way. As soon as you find out, you kind of have an obligation to tell your next-door neighbor, Joe, move it over. And after a certain amount of time, it's his property. He gets to keep it. The idea is, in the legal world, you can't just sit around. We don't allow that. We don't like that. You have to be proactive. You can't just sit around. And there are certain legal doctrines, when you do sit around, you lose out. Courts really don't like that. If you know something and you didn't do anything about it and you weren't active, you lose generally in the end. But there's got to be, it's just a reasonable time frame. It's not like a hard, fast rule. There are hard, fast rules on when to apply for a patent. But for infringement, if you know someone's infringing and you wait and you wait and you wait, you can't do that. Whereas if you take a proactive approach, Joe, you're infringing my patent. Stop and cease and desist. And on that note, my time is up. I will see everybody in the pinball room. I'll be this junkie at 3 in the morning hanging out. For those of the sunshine, I'll be watching the sunrise tomorrow morning. Thank you very much.